So although this season is somewhat of an anomaly, the first time North America has really experienced pandemic-related quarantines and sheltering, holding crops and delaying crops due to market challenges like weather impacts growers more often than not. So today we're going to catch up with three experts covering a wide range of greenhouse crops from a technical and cultural perspective to learn strategies that greenhouse professionals can use when product can't be shipped on time. So we'll talk about what crops respond well to holding and delaying strategies, from cutting back to temperature manipulation and chemicals. How can you make those kinds of decisions? And what data do we have to determine how to treat specific crops? Are there any that you absolutely should not hold in certain ways? We're going to tackle all this and much more for seed annuals, vegetative annuals, and perennials with Jerry, Gary, and Chris. The goal is to keep annual and perennial crops alive and saleable longer. I'm Bill Calkins with Ball, and I'll be the moderator for this discussion, and I'm really excited to welcome the guests, Jerry Gorchels, Gary Baller, and Chris Fifo, to this call. So first off, can you each quickly introduce yourselves and let the folks listening know your roles within the organization? So we'll start with Chris and then go to Jerry and finally to Gary.
Sure. Thanks, Bill. I'm Chris Fifo. I am a product representative for both Keith Seed and Darwin Perennials. And so it's all thing perennial, both seed and vegetative. Before this, I was a head grower in technical services with Swift Greenhouses for 30 years. And so my entire career has been spent growing perennial liners and finished crops.
Yes, thanks, Chris. And I'm Jerry Gorchels. I'm with Pan American Seed Company. I've been with Pan Am for 33 years now, and I'm one of the regional account managers, but I was a grower for 30 years before I went into the sales end of Pan American Seed. I've been in the industry for 48 years, and really, to be perfectly honest with you, I've never seen a spring like this. So there's a lot of challenges that we have to deal with and eventually move on from. So hopefully we'll help you with that today.
Yeah, and I agree with Jerry on this unprecedented spring. I'm Gary Baller. I'm a product and technical manager for Selecta North America. Prior to my role at Ball, I've been head grower production manager for many years across North America, and a lot of experience with these kind of challenges and what to deal with when you're stuck with crop.
So I think it's interesting that you guys were all growers in your past. You've all had tons of experience with multiple crops and all sorts of different production situations, and I think you're all agreeing that this is pretty unprecedented what we're dealing with now. So I'm going to go ahead and start with Jerry and Gary focusing on annuals, and I'm just going to ask you, can you share some different strategies that growers can use to hold crops or delay crops, and maybe what successful methods you've seen and used during your careers?
Well, I think, one of the first things our instinct is to do is to turn the thermostat down, to cool things down. As growers, we all know that crops develop slower at cooler temperatures, and at least then we feel like we have some control over them. For the most part, that will work, but there's other crops like vinca and pentas that you really can't turn your heat off on. Of course, there's temperature differentials that we can use too to control our growth. There's PGRs, there's growing on the dry side. Quite often that's the very common one, is keep things dry. And then, of course, using fertilizers appropriate for holding. Basically, it's just the CalMag fertilizers and staying away from phosphorus and ammonium. And then just cutting your feed levels in half will make a big difference, too. I think that those are some of the things that I've used to really hold the crops and keep them in good shape. There's other things, too, like pinching. There's certain crops like Angelonia that I would not pinch because then you actually get this antler effect after the pinch. But things like petunias, yeah, they respond quite nicely to cutting back. But basically, I think the main thing is to cool your crops down and then respond accordingly for the individual crops as far as what their needs are.
Gary, I agree with everything that Jerry is saying, absolutely. And I'd just like to kind of expand a little bit on some of these scenarios. Cold is a great technique if you can do it. Cooling the greenhouse is one of the most effective ways we can hold crops without having any kind of serious negative effect, no stunting from the PGR, no having to regrow or loss of shape from cutbacks, etc. But there are some things you've got to be aware of when you cool the greenhouse down. And one of the principles I think is really important, you have to kind of get your head around, and that's the concept of dew point. When you start talking about cooling your greenhouse cold, you're talking about letting your nights go cold and not heating at night. If it's warm, sunny weather, you have to make sure that you ventilate before you go to bed, because otherwise you'll build humidity up and then you'll hit dew point. And when you're trying to hold flowers, open flowers, if you get to dew point in the greenhouse, then you will actually get condensation in the blooms, and then you'll start getting into a botrytis battle. So it's always important, cold and low humidity in the greenhouse are paramount. And then, PGR strategies can be very, very effective. But it's really knowing, like so many things with PGRs, you really have to know your product, the species specifically, how you're applying it, what the rates and the efficacy of the chemicals are. Simple, broad strokes, hit everything with a two-part bonsai drench kind of scenarios can lead to some huge major problems post-harvest. Impatiens, begonias, something like that would have no growth after that type of application. So you have to be, PGR is going to have to be a much more precise strategy, species by species, in some cases, series by series, rate-based. So we are working on getting some information together as a group, Ball's technical group, to bring specific species-based information to play. But again, just to reemphasize what Jerry said too, cut back when you have to, not my first choice, but we can get into that more. And then dry is a good strategy. I like feeding. I never go hungry, but go to a harder feed program is good. I do not like starvation. It weakens the plant. But a hard feed versus a soft feed, I think, is a good strategy.
Yeah. I thought of something else too. This primarily comes from fall pansy growing down in Texas or some of the other hot climates. And right now in the south, you are having a harder time controlling your temperatures or keeping them on the cool side. One thing that I think is very important is not to sacrifice your temperature for light levels. Make sure your light levels stay up as high as possible, and that can also be a very good tool for holding your crops. There's nothing worse than trying to shade your greenhouses to control your temperature, and then under those lower light levels, the crop really starts to accelerate its stretched growth. So, don't sacrifice your light levels for your temperature. I think
it's an excellent point, Jerry, and I think it brings up memories of an experience too in a similar situation. One of the problems we had in trying to hold is we had a basket canopy over a bedding crop, and as soon as we removed that basket canopy, light levels improved, the crop started behaving a lot better, less pressure for botrytis, all the stuff. So that's the other thing too, is if you are trying to hold, try if you can to do it without a canopy over the top. And to Jerry's point, light is your friend always.
Yes it is.
Yeah, very important to have those bright light levels. The challenge at this time of year is our light intensities are going up, our days are getting longer, and so that is, increasing our thermal gains within the greenhouse. And so that leads to a larger positive diff and a more of a stretch response on the crops. And so that's where you really got to be aware of that. Outdoors, some crops is definitely a good option. Full sun, natural temperatures there, you'll avoid any temperature buildup within the greenhouse. But then with that that positive diff response, that's where PGRs can come in handy on some crops as well.
Yeah.
I think when we talk about putting outside, I think that's a great strategy where applicable. I just think, depending on where you are regionally, and what the weather is regionally. You know, some protection strategy should be in play, whether it be, you know, frost blanket or morning syringing, but trying to avoid the potential of getting frost on a crop. Also, greenhouse tissue that's been grown warmer in the greenhouse, ideally you want to turn the heat down in the greenhouse as low as you can get it for a few days, transition it before you take it outside into the cold, or at least look at a time when you transition it outside where the temperatures are a little bit moderate so that they get adapted to that outside environment. And then light levels too, going from a shadier under canopy greenhouse out into the full sun of outside can also cause some potential damage to the tissue. But outdoors is good when you can do it.
Wow, that's a lot of fantastic information. I think that some of the points that you guys made about the regional differences, the fact that, you know, if you are choosing a PGR strategy, it needs to be very crop specific. And just some of the general information is going to be good to keep in mind. So a couple of you mentioned cutting back. That can elicit all sorts of different ideas in people's heads. So can you define what you mean by cutting back during this discussion? And I guess maybe it's how far to cut back or different strategies. And are there specific production or cultural practices that need to be in place after a crop is cut back?
Well, primarily, I don't like to cut back perennials unless you absolutely have to. Partially because, you know, there's that handful of perennials that are only going to flower that one time per season. But the ones that are more, you know, first-year flowering and continuous flowering type of items like, you know, veronicas, dianthus, lavenders, things like this, when we do come to cutting them back, I would say, you know, 50% would be probably about the max I'd like to. And then, you know, big part there is make sure you get that that foliage removed. You know, don't leave that on the pots. It's going to lead to botrytis and other problems. And always practice good sanitation on tools and whatnot that you are using to cut them back. But then I generally like a good preventative fungicide spray afterwards, especially since, like I said, we're holding these crops. And so we're going to have an extended period of time where they're going to be more exposed. We've got those open wounds now. And so I think a preventative spray after cutting is a good idea.
Yeah, anyone else want to weigh in on cutting? Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Gary.
Okay, I will.
Yeah, you go, Jerry.
So, you know, I mentioned earlier about Angelonia, and this is a prime example of a plant that has the flower spike coming out of the terminal or out of the main shoot of the plant itself. When you remove that, you do two things. You change the shape of the plant where the secondary flowers are going to go more to the outside or spray out maybe at a 45-degree angle, leaving a hole in the center of the plant itself. And you're also going to delay your flowering about anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks. So you have to keep that in mind when you cut things back. Is it a terminal flower or are they axillary flowers? So you have to keep that in mind. A crop like petunias that does branch quite freely, that will have secondary flowers coming along on the side shoots, and that will bring itself back up and fill back in. So just keep in mind what type of habit the plant it has, you know, to start with. Something like a zinnia, for instance, that has that main flower first, if you're holding for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, yeah, you could take off that first flower and then let the secondaries come up and your plants would be just fine. But depending on where you are with when you think you're going to ship is really going to make that call on whether or not you cut back.
Yeah, you know, in my experiences, we talked about in three ways. We talked about a cutback, which was a pretty serious cutback. We talked about a haircut, which was just kind of a trim. And then we talked about deflowering. So, you know, obviously the least dramatic to the plant is simply removing the existing flowers. It's a great way to prevent dead blooms and botrytis and disease coming in on top of the crop, but it isn't really going to affect the the habit and search of the plant. So oftentimes deflowering is done in conjunction with a PGR and a holding strategy. You go in and say, all right, we got to hold these guys for 3 weeks. So I'm going to go in there and we're going to remove all the open blooms, and then we're going to hit it with the PGR. And that way I've got fresh blooms and I'll hold it. Haircut, again, less dramatic. You're basically taking the terminals and the flowers tips off of the plant. It can be strategic in a combination, taking the dominant shoots and dominant plants out, and that's often the case with in a larger container or basket type situation. You do kind of a trim around the rim of the pot, or just kind of a general haircut to shape the basket. And then you have the other strategy, which is really just cut it back, where you're literally, all right, I'm going to kind of start over. And I think to Jerry's point, you really have to know the nature of the flower on your plant, be it perennial or annual or regardless. Is this a free branching plant? Is it a soft plant that free flowers? That will determine. Then you can cut it back, and then you know that it's going to flush and fill in. Unless you're in a very small container, you'll probably get a pretty decent shaped plant. But anything that's a spike flowering plant, it's going to dramatically change the shape of the plant. And the smaller the container that you're in, the more dramatic that difference of the look will be. So you really kind of got to look at, you know, cutting back. And again, there are crops that you just should not cut back. They just don't respond. Other crops you can cut back freely. You can mow freely. So it really depends.
You know, I like your comment about deflowering with a very popular crop like nonstop begonias any type of those Himalayas types or fibrous types too. Just by taking off those first flower buds and then letting the plant reflower, it will give you at least a week to 10 days time and still have a completely clean crop so to work with. And then you'll have a fresh flower bed to go to store with.
I think that, you know, that kind of just overall, that concept there, Jerry, just kind of goes overall to the high level over this whole conversation here is you know, how long am I trying to hold this for? I mean, am I trying to buy myself a month? Am I buying myself a few weeks? What is my goal in this hold? And you know, how dramatic is the hold that you're going to need?
You know, and
do some crazy things.
Yeah. As greenhouse managers, we do have to think about that. Obviously, it's going to be the greenhouse manager's call, and you know, there's some other questions that we'll cover later on in the bit that will also help in those decision makings. But really, it's a separate call on each individual genus and species.
Yeah.
Those are all really, really good points. And you mentioned, Jerry, you mentioned Anzalonia and some other crops that have that significant terminal type flower, and Chris, you talked a little bit about perennials and which ones you would cut back and which ones you wouldn't, and how not to really paint a broad brush. So how about any you know, in your guys' history as growers, any plans for delay in holding crops that have failed, or what are some bad ideas or crops that just don't respond well to some of these methods?
Well, I think one of the worst ideas is just to go in and do a blanket PGR, a bonsai drench or a heavy sumagic spray. I've seen, yes, we can go ahead and hold these crops for a very long time, but then the problem the grower necessarily wouldn't see would be that they wouldn't grow out of it properly after it does finally go to the consumers.
Go ahead, Jerry.
No, that's a good comment, Chris, because I've seen growers go in and I use the term laminate. They laminated the crop with plant growth regulators because they had to hold it. But, you know, unfortunately, that lamination goes into the consumer, too, so, and that discourages them. So we don't really want to do that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, I lived that experience where I had a grower that basically was, you know, instructed that we needed to hold this section, and basically decided a blanket bonsai spray was the solution. And oh boy, was it the solution, I'll tell you. We kept some plants around for 6 months just to prove a point to remind that grower, about those kind of calls. But yeah, I think over PGR definitely the number one mistake you make, and you know, we alluded to earlier, the PGR just has to be, it has to be precise. There's a lot of good reference materials out there to help you guide the rates that you want to use and the application methodology you want to use as far as PGRs are concerned. You know, yeah, the other things I'd tell you is put, you know, mistakes is like putting a cold crop or a warm crop in a cold house. New Guinea impatiens, hanging baskets. Say, wow, I'm going to need to hold these things. They're full color. I'm going to basically drop the temperature in that house to 50 degrees. Not a good idea. There are certain species that just cannot handle cold temperatures at all. Mm-hmm. So that I've made that mistake a couple of times.
Yeah, so have I. you know, you bring back two interesting points. Getting back to the PGRs, you know, if you are inclined to you know, maybe some of the smaller growers where they do have multiple genuses in a house or even mixed containers. A B9 or a B9 Cyclocell tank mix is actually more forgiving, and it won't have the same impact as Bonsai does, but it will help tone your crops better to a point where you do feel you have more control on the crops. But here again, make sure you check your rates. You know, the other thing about having warm crops and cool greenhouses, if you hadn't already planned your crop placements in your greenhouse, you know, putting the cool crops all together and then the warmer crops all together should be the way it's been done, so you can react accordingly for the needs of these crops. But, yeah, there's nothing worse than having a bay of pansies next to a bay of impatiens or New Guinea impatiens or pentas or, you know, or vinca, you know. So that's when you really run into difficulties and it becomes very challenging.
And, you know, Jerry, that scenario is kind of one of those scenarios that I think is probably going to play itself out with some of these guys right now, is because you've got those pansies in the way. And you've got to make that decision. What am I doing with these pansies that are in the way? And I've got behind it, I've got another crop of something that's probably going to be on a 5 or 6 week crop turn to hit spring peak. So, yeah, that pansy in the way and other cool crop in the way is something I'm sure is part of this reality out there in the world right now.
Yeah.
So before we go into a little bit more specifics on perennials with Chris, I'm interested in something that we had all talked about a few days ago when we were when we sort of made the decision to have this call, and that was why growers would choose to hold crops versus cutting them back, selecting these different strategies, and what would impact that decision. You've talked a lot about it, but one thing that you guys had brought up a couple days ago that I think is worth getting into is pot sizes, and so if you're growing in packs or in 4-inch or in gallons, I think that would have to have a significant sort of impact on your decision. And also, you referenced it a little bit, and certainly the uncertainty is out there, but it's the timing and number of weeks that you think you're going to have till you go to market. Does anyone want to jump in about pot size specifically, and maybe a little bit about timing?
Gary, why don't you go first on this one?
Gary, you there?
Sorry, guys. I was muted there for a second.
Oh.
Inadvertently. I think one of the scenarios is when we talked about pot size, it has to do with the specific nature of the plant. Like, for example, as Jerry alluded to, you know, something soft like a petunia, you can cut back and it'll flush and it'll fill. And that's fine. Even like a 4-inch pot, you can get that. But if you're in packs, then it's very difficult to get a pack on a lot of plants, even something like a petunia, to give you the kind of shape that you want that product to really look like. So in those situations, you've got to decide, you know, what is your game plan here, and how that pot size is influenced, that is going to be you know, based on when you think you can get that thing sold and what's it going to look like when you go to market. Can you go to market, you know, 4 weeks late with a pack that is a little lumpy? Is the market going to bear that? Whereas if you're in a bigger container, you have the opportunity, even with something like for example, a tall snapdragon, and a pack, you cut back a tall snapdragon, and you get a couple of branches that's going to look wonky. But in even like a quart pot or a gallon, 2.5 quart pot, you cut back that tall snap, it'll throw a couple of shoots up there, but it'll still look acceptable in that bigger container. So to me, that's the biggest issue. I mean, when you look at the container size, it really has to be with how that product's going to present itself in a cutback scenario. And that's where I think a lot of times in smaller containers, you kind of paint yourself into a hold, cold, or PGR strategy.
Yeah. You know, and you mentioned the larger container sizes. I think larger container sizes, in my mind, are easier to hold than they are the packs. And as we produce our crops through the season, it seems we have more plantings of the packs. You might have 7 or 8 plantings of impatience, where you will only have 4 plantings of 4-inch or quart impatience. The larger the container size, the easier it is to hold it, dry it down, has more light around the plant itself. It's less prone to stretch like they are in the packs. And I'm going to get ahead of myself in our program here, but as these plantings come on, and if you think you're going to, literally get into the next planting before the first planting goes, I mean, just cut your losses and dump that and start shipping the second one. You know, just don't even mess around with it. Just
absolutely, Jerry. I think that's absolutely true. And I think when you get into these, you know, the smaller containers, especially ones that are targeted in the front end of spring, is there even going to be a market, even if you could do it, versus the cost that you have to do it? And the other cost that you have to look at about deciding whether you cut and hold the crop is the opportunity cost of that space. Was there another crop that was going to go in that space that you now aren't going to be able to do because you chose to hold and cut this crop back? Is that the best economic decision? That maybe you get to market with a product that's going to be okay, or do you cut your loss and say, no, I'm going to plant now, and I'm going to go to market with the product that was intended on the crop schedule in the methodology that it was intended, so that it hits the market like I grew it and intended it to hit? What's going to get me the most revenue in the end?
This decision process is happening right now. I mean, within the next 2 weeks, we have product on the bench. We have things in the seed house that should be going onto that bench soon, or onto that floor soon. And so, you know, we have to weigh it out. And, you know, it would be great if we had a crystal ball to say, okay, all the garden centers can open up again, and, you know, and it's a green light, go ahead. But, it's still not that way. So we're just going to have to weigh it out. But, you know, if it looks like the next crop is coming on, eat your losses.
I would agree. You know, and we always used to look at this as one of the most difficult equations that a lot of growers have to face, even in normal years. But in this situation, it's exceptional. But you have to come back to the financial decision. We always use the term, the first dump is the cheapest dump. So that basically means the earlier you are in the production process, the less skin you have in the game. Is it in the plug tray? Well, no, I have not invested in the pack, the soil, the labor to plant it, the tag, the movement, the lay down, et cetera, et cetera. So if you can cut the loss, you know, before planting, that's the cheapest one. But the problem is that requires foresight into what's going to happen in the market 6-8 weeks in front of you. So that's difficult to do. But then oftentimes, you know, like I said, we're faced with the reality of now I've got a crop in the way. And that is, unfortunately, the math that we have to usually decide that we can or, you know, can or can't get in the ground because there's something that is literally ready to ship that isn't shipped. And that's kind of where I think that we're landing on this conversation. And those are going to be serious calls that are going to have to be made.
Another option is to stagger the trims. I mean, if we really have to go to trimming a plant back and trimming a crop back, we can, you know, it's uncertainty that's really holding us back here. And so we can do that in stages, maybe just trim back a third of the crop. And then maybe next week or the week after, do a third again if you have to. And that way we don't have the whole thing going out when, say, oh, the garden center all of a sudden opens up and my crops have not regrown yet. And so I like Jerry's comment that gallons are certainly easier to hold than packs are. And an important point there, as you mentioned, more lights. You know, space your crops out. Give them some good airflow. Get that humidity down. That's really going to help the individual containers, you know, gallon pots, hold a lot better with some better spacing.
Yeah, those are great points. I guess it's like the song, right? You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them. And nobody likes the dump, obviously. But this year, it sounds like those calls are going to be made and going to have to be made. So I think you guys have given some really good advice. And, yeah, I think what Gary said is true. It comes down to that opportunity cost of the space. And it's a good mantra. The first dump is definitely the cheapest dump. So, hey, Chris, I think it's time to talk a little bit about perennials. You have shared quite a bit as we've gone on here, and I know that they're are probably some similarities to how you're going to treat your annuals. But can you talk a little bit about growers who have perennial crops and are ready to ship to spring markets and really know where to send them in an uncertain kind of future, and what kind of advice you'd give those folks?
Well, there are a lot of similarities to the annuals in, you know, controlling with the moisture, you know, higher light levels, the better. Cold temperatures, that's one benefit that many perennials have. We can hold them at colder temperatures than some of the annuals. And as Gary mentioned before, fertilizer. You know, I don't like completely quitting the fertilizer to hold a crop. That's going to weaken the plant. It's going to make it more susceptible to diseases and botrytis. But do continue with a CalMag-type fertilizer and watch the phosphorus levels. Keep the phosphorus levels down low. That's going to help control the growth as well, help control the softness. 2010-20 is definitely not a feed of choice for holding, even at a low rate, more like a 13-2-13 or a 14-4-14 type of fertilizer, 100, 150 parts per million as necessary. But just give them something. My philosophy on growing is always you are what you eat. You know, if you're not going to give them anything, you're not going to have much of a crop there when it does come time to sell them.
Yes, I agree.
So what about specific perennial crops that you think would respond well to some of these strategies, or others that you might, you know, you definitely wouldn't shear back, or you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't change up the feeding or one of the other variables? Kind of like I asked the other guys, are there any specific crops that you just want to warn growers about while we have this chance right now?
Yeah, our difficulties are our first ship weeks here, our early spring bloomers, Iberis, Aquilegia, let's say our perennial Alyssums, Leopard's Bane, Dronicum, Myosotis for sure. These are one and done crops. And so these, I think, are the most challenging in that we cannot cut them back. All we can do is hold the flowers that we currently have on them. And these are crops that can handle, you know, right down to freezing. These are ones, you know, I mentioned, you know, if you're able to, you can move them outside. You can have a frost blanket available if necessary. Like this morning in the Chicago area, we woke up to some snow on the ground. Frost blanket is going to definitely be beneficial. But if these are already acclimated within the greenhouse, already down to cool temperatures in the greenhouse, they're going to do just fine. And we're going to be able to hold those flowers a lot longer on those crops. And so those are some of the most challenging ones. And that's where we want to make sure we keep some feed on them as well, but to avoid excess phosphorus and definitely avoid, say, ammonia-type fertilizers. And so these are the ones I definitely would not cut back. But, you know, there are many others that are first-year flowering perennials now. It's been a big deal. And so we can cut these back as necessary. You know, Achilleas, Agastaches, Dianthus for sure. And lavenders, you know, we're going to trim those back. We can either do the haircut method or we can cut them back, say, 50% if necessary. I generally prefer haircuts versus a really hard whack back. But the biggest drawback on annuals or perennials is the time that it's going to take to reflower these. And so It's anybody's guessing when the market is going to break, and so do just part of a crop at a time. Keep the other half, ready for sale as necessary, but don't do the entire thing. Don't put all your eggs in one basket now that it's Easter time. It's a good illusion right there.
Good advice.
I really like
so
that.
I really like
that advice from Chris. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. I like that. When we're delving in the unknown, if you have no experience doing a cutback on a crop, then by all means, don't do all of it. But learn as we go.
And so we have another category, because we have our early spring bloomers, but then we've got our summer and fall bloomers. And so some of those that are manipulating photo period and getting some of our summer bloomers to bloom earlier in the greenhouse, say Rudbeckias, Echinaceae, maybe Buddleias, these are going to be another challenge. And so if we've got those in flower already, one thing you can do is we can cut back our lighting. If we're still doing photoperiodic lighting, we can bring it to natural day length. That is going to extend the blue time on those. But there's some of them, they're not going to handle the cold. Monardas and Buddleias, these are ones I would not move into the cold because they're just going to go downhill. And so those are going to be challenging crops. That's where I would look at PGRs. I prefer sprays over drenches. You have a lot more control with a foliar spray of a Bonsai or Sioux Magic, or as Jerry mentioned, B9 and CycleCell tank mix. That was always one of my favorites. You do have to be careful of possibly a little bit of flower burn on some items, say like an Iceland poppy is going to be in full bloom, beautiful bay of poppies. They can burn a little bit on open blooms with the B9 CycleCell combo. So something to be aware of, but B9 itself can help green up a crop. We've got to keep the color in these, and B9 on just about anything can add some green to the crop. So it's another thing to keep in mind to keep these saleable. And then I'd say our third category is our season-long bloomers. Those dianthus, those coreopsis, we can cut them back. They're going to be back in flower in 4 weeks or so. And so it really is crop by crop on what we're going to do with them. Like I said, I've had a lot of experience with our finished crops at Swift. I've experienced every type of season that there is over the years and all kinds of different growers. As Gary mentioned, you're going to have a grower that's going to want to go in there and just blanket apply a PGR. And so we've had seasons when I would not be able to keep up on the planting. There are seasons like this where we're holding stuff. And so a lot of times, with these crops, perennials, they're just going to be in bloom for a certain period of time, and we're always staggering our plantings. And so theoretically, we have some stock held back yet. And in my opinion, perennials can hold a little bit better in a liner or in a plug tray than some annuals. They're not going to get as root bound as quickly, and so we can still hold that stock back and keep it from planting. And those, we can keep those all cold and kind of hold them in suspended animation until we have the space and until we need the crop ready.
Chris, you mentioned the warm perennials too. I want to throw in there hibiscus because, you might
Absolutely.
Have a hibiscus crop that's coming into bud. And if you chill that down to into the 40s, you could very easily abort all your flower buds. So
yeah.
That's definitely a crop that you cannot chill down.
Asclepias would be another one. Asclepias is a huge item for butterfly gardens. There's been a lot of push on the Asclepias tuberosa. This is one that I would not cool down like that. That is a warm storage only, and it's not something that really responds well to trimming back either. It does trim back, but you only get usually a single, maybe two branches coming back, and it completely changes the shape of the plant, and it does take a long time to come back into flower. We discussed earlier about the temperature differential. Now, if we're in a greenhouse and we have the capability of running a negative diff, that'd be dropping the temperature before the sun rises. Dropping it 20 to 25 degrees, if possible, is a really good tactic. But this means we need to run heat in the greenhouse at night. And so our normal tactic was to run 55, maybe 60 degrees at night after it's completely dark, turn the temperature up. And this is going to help you prevent hitting that dew point as well, as Gary mentioned, getting that condensation on the plants that's going to lead to some serious problems. But then early in the morning, drop that temperature down into the 30s, the low 40s if possible. Negative dip is extremely effective on perennials.
Oh, that's fantastic information. I think this has really been a great discussion. I want to go ahead and wrap it up because I know that the listeners are probably going to need to get back in the greenhouse and back to the computer and continue their planning. So I'm going to give you guys the chance to add any closing comments, catch anything we've missed. Is there anything else that you guys want to share with growers out there who are struggling with this challenge right now?
Well, I just want to make the comment that, you know, we're a resource for Ball, and please feel free to reach out to us to get information. Reach out through your sales rep. They can get direct access to us, or you can find us on our emails on the websites. And, yeah, we'd be glad to, if you want to get into more heavily detailed discussions on specific crop situations, we're here to help.
And also,
yeah, you said it perfectly.
Yeah, I just wanted to reiterate that as we are making decisions in our greenhouses, that I don't think there's any one characteristic or tip that we can give you to help you out. It's weighing out the balances of whether or not you use temperature or dry downs or lower feed levels or, you know, make sure you keep your light high. That, of course, is one that you would definitely want to do. But it's a mixture of all these things that are really going to help you make it this year.
Yes, use environment first. Use all your tools you have available, temperature, light, water, nutrients, and gases. Look at those items first. Manipulate each one of those to get the desired results crop-by-crop basis. And as Gary said, use your resources. There's tons of information available out there through your Ball sales rep, through your Ball tech team, and just on Google. These are tools that Jerry and Gary and I didn't have growing up in the greenhouse, and we had to figure out all the stuff for ourselves without the benefits of Google. So use your resources. Lots of information available to you.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, guys. I know that we're currently living through this unique period in the history of North America and the world. And at Ball, I think we just want to wish the best to everyone in the industry. And hopefully this discussion offered some helpful tips and strategies to navigate the current situation. We've also worked collaboratively using our expert technical resources team at Ball to put together some additional resources, like a sortable tool that Gary referenced, identifying specific crops and effective holding strategies by at a species level. And watch for links to these resources on ballseed.com, on the Ball Seed LinkedIn page, and at the Greenhouse Tech Team Facebook group. You can find that on Facebook. All you got to do is search Greenhouse Tech Team. And like all these guys said, your Ball Seed rep is another fantastic resource for information about keeping crops saleable longer. So don't hesitate to reach out to them or any of the product teams at Ball. We're all definitely here to help and make this a successful season. So, you know, good luck out there. Stay safe and well. Remember that gardening is essential and spring is not canceled. And once we get through this, I'm sure this group will be back with some more information this summer and into the fall to help keep these crops moving through retail.